stand in the way of sinners or sit in the seat of mockers. His delight is in the law of the Lord. Let's start out with the obvious. What does it mean to walk, stand, and sit with wicked sinning mockers? Aside from don't do that, the word, the Hebrew, for which I will not tell you because I do not know it, not having been to Bible school, for wicked or ungodly and sinners are often used as synonyms in the Psalms, but they actually are different words. Wickedness suggests being guilty of one or more sinful acts, whereas sinner suggests a life dominated by evil. It might be like the difference, for instance, between one instance of shoplifting and a career criminal. Mockers, or the scornful, as many versions have it, go beyond mere sinning, and they actively seek to undermine the godly by ridicule, belittling, and etc. So there's actually a progression going here from getting your toes wet, just being a little bit wicked, to full immersion evil. So mockery, by the way, just as a little aside, that is a ridiculously powerful tool of the devil. In fact, he was the first to use it. Satan first used it against Eve. Did God really say that you can't eat from any of those trees? Well, no, now that you say that, it sounds pretty stupid, doesn't it? You know? And he got his little hooks in her. Our Christian beliefs are mocked all the time. Six-day creation? Where are you from? You shouldn't live with him before you marry him? What century is this anyway? You have a problem with gay marriage? I can't even talk to you. It's so easy when we hear that to give in and say, oh, you're right, this just sounds dumb. I can't have that, I can't listen to this. And so you kind of shove all those little beliefs of yours, those quaint outmoded beliefs, behind a little door that says, do not open unless Sunday. And you maybe didn't become a mocker, but you sure have been influenced by them. So what does it mean to even go beyond that, to actually sit, walk, and stand with those people? We can't just avoid people who are doing these things. I mean, aside from the fact that this is pretty much everywhere, we have the Great Commission to concern ourselves with. We can't really tell people about God if we're hiding in our churches and not talking to anyone who has been a wicked sinning mocker. So maybe, can you go to the verse in Ephesians?
It's up.
Oh, thank you. Yes, so, great. This verse from Ephesians might shed some light on it. For this you can be sure, no immoral, impure, or greedy person, such a person is an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no one deceive you with empty words. Because of those things, God's wrath comes on those who are disobedient. Therefore, do not be partners with them. It's my emphasis. If you've been reading our 100 days, this may sound familiar because it's from Ephesians 5, but also you may remember the story of the stoning of Stephen, if you have that picture up. Acts tells us that Saul was among those who he held the coats of those who stoned Stephen. And he approved what they had done. As far as we know, he didn't throw any stones. Maybe he didn't quite feel comfortable with that. Maybe he was just getting his toes wet. Maybe he was standing in the way of sinners. But the next time we see him, he's actively pursuing Christians and trying to make their lives both miserable and short. So he'd become a full-blown mocker. So becoming partners with them, I think, is a important kind of clarification on that. Okay, back to the psalm. How do we avoid doing this? What do we do instead? Well, we meditate on the law of the Lord day and night. Well, meditate, the word meditate, does not necessarily carry the connotation of entering an altered, trance-like state, I'm sure this can be a benefit at times. I'm sure it can be dangerous at times, but that's not really precisely what it means. It's basically saying it's meaning to think deeply upon.
Okay. Am I stating that? Yeah,
sure. Oh, okay.
This isn't working anymore either, so.
Never mind.
Okay.
It's a bad day to be a battery.
Yeah.
You keep going, and okay. I'll take care of it.
Okay. Well, meditate means to simply to think deeply upon or to consider seriously, perhaps to chew on. When applied to the law and the Lord, it certainly is also insinuating that we are to be looking for how to apply the law to our daily lives. So yeah, not so much an area in which I shine. So let's just move along to the fun stuff, becoming trees. Okay, let's move on there. So can we have that next picture there?
Just a minute.
Yeah.
There you go.
There we go. Yeah. He is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Everything he does prospers. Well, so it's as simple as that, is it? Yeah, not so much. We have been over this dichotomy a number of times. Mark, in fact, did it last week. He had his little illusions, appearance versus reality. So we've definitely talked about the fact that sometimes what we see does not really match with what's actually going on. Secondly, psalms are poetry. They're allowed a little bit of hyperbole. And honestly, as a rule of thumb sense, this is quite true. You follow God's laws, you tend to do much better in life than those who don't, even in a mere temporal sense. But an eternal sense is obviously what we're looking for here. Paul himself says, those who, if we have only hope for this world, we are more to be pitied than all men. So we're looking for an eternal sense here of prospering versus coming to ruin and being blown away like chaff. So another really important thing to think of is, the final few verses talk about God looking over the path of the righteous, watching the path of the righteous, while the path of the sinners leads to ruin. God is right there with us on our path, even in the times that aren't prosperous. But if you choose the path of the wicked, you're choosing to go without God, which is a very terrible thing. Okay, so if you're still hung up on the whole disparity here, let's have a look at a brief reading list. Okay, Psalm 73. My absolute favorite. Definitely read that one. Romans 8, especially the end of that chapter, and the entire book of Job. So read those if we're still having a particular issue. Okay, now we do have to go back to meditation, even though I'm not any good at it, because I think that is the key to this psalm. Let's have that next slide. Here we have Psalm 1 and Deuteronomy 6 and 7 here lined up together. It's quite possible that the psalmist, that David, had Deuteronomy 6 and this very common, this very often repeated commandment of God in the back of his head. God tells them, keep these laws on your hearts, impress them on your children, talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, and when you get up. What we have here is two contrasting lifestyles. One is becoming increasingly steeped in wickedness and sin, and the other is being intentionally steeped in God's law, which is an antidote to the former. This is definitely convicting to me. My mind is most easily filled with daily concerns. My kids, my to-do list, a discipline problem, a self-discipline problem, maybe my current novel or TV show. Not so much the law of the Lord. And it's not like our society makes it easy to step back and take a serious look at things. There is always something electronic vying for your attention, distractions everywhere. But this is the key to avoiding the influence of evil, being that tree planted by streams of water, always producing and never withering. Okay, let's put this in some practical terms. Meditation is, as we've discussed, next slide, considering or thinking over carefully, spending time in quiet thinking, or to intend or to plan. Like any other discipline, this is something that we can practice. I'm a perfectionist. I look at my life, I see where I am, and where I ought to be, and my strong impulse is to say, it's impossible. I should just give up now and go eat another chocolate chip cookie. Forget it. But God knows our weaknesses. He does not expect us to go from what is to what should be in an instant. And we know this. We know that you can't go from a couch to a marathon in a day. You can't lose 50 pounds in a weekend. You can't go from a pigsty to Martha Stewart in a few hours of cleaning. You have to set yourself goals and you have to start practicing it. So my own life, 9 or so months ago, I got tired of feeling guilty about my lack of exercise, and I finally made a plan to do something about it. I joined an online fitness site, had to pay money for it, so I'd feel especially guilty if I didn't do it. Part of this was finding the right teacher, a teacher who helped me redefine that what exercise meant, what being active meant, it's not just pain and sweat. So that's a big deal, understanding what we're actually asking for, not sitting there going, oh, I must meditate, I must meditate. Not so much. And it was really hard to get in the mode. I have not completely gotten in the mode. I have ups and downs, but I saw benefits in the first couple of months. And I am continuing to pursue it, and I'm feeling much stronger and better about this whole thing. And it was something that has to be done incrementally. We can do the same thing with spiritual disciplines such as meditation. It might not even involve all that pain and sweat that you fear that it does. Here's a good starting point. Think about when and where you already find it easiest to think deeply. The car, the shower, on a bike ride, in a dark room with a candle, at a kitchen table with a journal in front of you. There are lots and lots of different answers that might be right for you. In my own life, I am planning to start with a simple commitment to make scripture the first thing I read in the morning and the last thing I read at night. Hoping that bookended in that way, I will also find myself thinking about it in the middle of the day. I'm also teaching it to my kids, as you saw demonstrated this morning. They are learning it, and if they're saying it and I'm helping them practice it, I'm also saying it and practicing it because they don't know how to read yet. So that's pretty helpful. My hope is that with the establishment of the basic discipline, my own delight will grow, and the amount of time that I want to devote to it will increase. And it's not like it's done in a vacuum. I have every expectation that the Holy Spirit will direct my meditations and their applications. My job is to make the time and space. His is to fill it up. Okay, so let's be social and kind of Quaker here and do some couple of small group questions. Groups of 3 or 4, I really don't care if you do it with your spouse or not. I'm not going to make you mix up. I do have some handouts if maybe Dan wanted to give one of those to each table. Those are a few quotes on meditation that I'm not going to bore you by reading, but if you're interested, you can read them. Here's the questions I'd like you to talk about amongst yourselves. What ways do you practice meditation right now, if any? When and where is it easiest to get into a contemplative mode? And what practical steps can you take, even this very week, to increase the amount of meditation in your life? So, and that is all I have for today, so talk about that, and then maybe someone will pray and we can go.
I think you're getting a handout, just a second.
Yeah, but it's not. What are you looking for?
Oh, I have to restart it.
Yeah, but he's looking for them. He got out of it.
Yeah, you had another slide on there. I tried to advance it to the last slide.
Just to be clear, we're doing the questions that will be up here.
And have a moment.
Yeah, it's just something you can look at
when you get around.
There we go. Yep.
Slide 45 is a dead end.
Yes.
Yes, I did.